Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to We Dig Plants, where we bring the culture to horticulture. You're listening to us on Heritage Radio Network. We're broadcasting from our two repurposed shipping containers at Roberta's Pizza in Brooklyn, in Bushwick, Brooklyn. And what you, as listener, don't know is that there is a garden on top of the shipping container, which produces food for these amazing pizzas here at Roberta's. So these containers house Heritage Radio Network, so we can discuss all things food and plant related. So yes. I'm Alice Marcus Krieg.
I'm Carmen DeVito.
And we are the ladies of Groundworks, Inc., Garden Design, Installation, and Maintenance in the New York metro area. And today in our container, we're going to talk about the visual arts of food and horticulture, botanical painting. And we have a great friend and guest, art collector Isaac M. Sutton. Welcome, Isaac.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
The last time we saw Isaac, we were in London.
Yes.
That's right.
Yes. But first, before we talk about London
and
the art collection, we're going to do the horticultural honor roll. Joe? So today's horticultural honor roll is based on the kind of signature painting of Isaac's collection, which is a dogwood that Isaac has commissioned, and it's a beautiful painting by Katie Lee, and it's a pink dogwood, and it's in front of his house, and he's actually doing a whole series on these dogwoods. But so it got me thinking, and Isaac, I want to give you a little information about this dogwood. So our horticultural honor roll is a guy named he's a Japanese botanist, Nobu Satomi. So you have a Satomi dogwood. He was born in 1922 and he just recently died in 2002. And this cultivar was named in Japan and introduced to the European and U.S. markets in the 1980s. So the dogwood cornice has a rather rich history. It's more than just a pretty landscape tree. Cornus is a genus of about 30 to 60 species of woody plants in the Cornaceae family. It's commonly known as dogwood. Most are deciduous or they're shrubs, but a few species are nearly herbaceous perennial sub-shrubs. So the name dogwood can be attributed to two different sources. Dogwood is a very hard and strong wood, and it was said that the term dogwood could have easily evolved from the Celtic word dag or dagwood over the years. The wooden dagwood was simply a useful pointed tool, dag meaning pointed. The tight-grained wood contains no silica, so it was useful in cleaning small spaces that were easily scratched, such as watches and jewelry. So the wood is so hard that the finest weaving shuttles are made from it, and later golf club heads. The botanical name cornus reflects this quality as it means horn or hard.
As hard as horn.
Right.
Interesting.
Bullhorn.
I didn't know that.
So there's also a Christian biblical term for explanation for dogwood. According to old Christian legend, the dogwood tree used to grow large and tall. It was compared in size and shape to the oak tree. And at the time of the crucifixion, it was said that wood from the dogwood tree was selected to fashion the cross. The distressed and saddened dogwood, the dogwood was selected to make the cross. So this distressed and saddened the dogwood tree so much that Jesus took pity on the tree and promised that the dogwood trees would never again grow so large to use the wood as a cross. So that's why they're smaller and more humble at this point.
Well, I wish Jesus would intervene and get rid of anthracnose.
Well... Well, the real irony is that this story is not true because in Palestine there were no dogwood trees.
No, no.
But leave it to those. The Christians have to consume everything.
They have to explain everything.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. It is. It is. So think about that when you're looking at your tree. One more legend. The Cherokee have a legend concerning the dogwood. They believe that a tiny race of people lived in the forest and watched over them, and they were called the Dogwood People. They taught them how to live in harmony with the land, and they watch over the elderly and the infants. The Dogwood People believe in doing good deeds for others. This is very Isaac Sutton.
Yes.
and for the simple act of kindness, not for personal gain or to have someone indebted to you. So that's very Isaac Sutton.
Thank you.
Yes.
So let's go to Q, where the show exhibited. Let's start, though, with how you got started collecting and how it ended up at Q.
Well, I started collecting botanical art in 1998. Mm-hmm. That's when the seminal show, groundbreaking show of Dr. Shirley Sherwood in botanical art came to New York.
Mm-hmm.
I must have read a review of it somewhere in the newspaper, either New York Times or some local paper, and I decided to go and see it.
Right.
You know, I'm an art lover. I was a collector before I started collecting botanical art.
Right.
And I went to see the show, and I was taken aback. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. They were beautiful paintings.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seeked out all the different associations and shows and galleries that sold botanical art and started mm-hmm. collecting botanical art.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't stop. I just kept on collecting and collecting. And I was told that I was collecting the best. In the beginning, I would buy what was... because I didn't know better.
You bought what you liked.
I bought what I liked, but also it was cheap.
Uh-huh.
Because I didn't want to make a mistake, an expensive mistake.
Right.
And then as I got confident and I went along, and I turned to you, Alice. you were one of my one of the people that I bought from when you were in your old job.
Yes.
And I started understanding more of quality and instead of just quantity.
Mm-hmm. And well, and the more you look, the more you educate yourself.
Exactly.
And right.
And I started buying bigger, more important pieces and even more expensive pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, somebody told me you should contact the Hunt Institute of Botanical Art in Pittsburgh and let them know that you exist and that you have this collection.
Right.
I did, and they recommended me to turn around to certain artists to buy, and I did.
Mm-hmm.
And then they came over to New York.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
You remember? You were,
we had dinner at the Artisanal.
Right, exactly. And they looked at it and said, we'd like to have a Sutton exhibit mm-hmm. in Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. And that's how we started.
And who are the artists? Tell our listeners who the artists are. They're international.
They're international. They're from all over the world. Uh-huh. Australian, American, English, Italian, Japanese.
And they're contemporary.
Contemporary.
Right.
Everybody in the show, at least in the exhibit, is or was live at the time we started the exhibit.
Mm-hmm.
It started in Pittsburgh. It opened there. In fact, the catalog is published by the Hunt Institute.
Right, and that's part of Carnegie Mellon University.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And then it traveled to New York,
mm-hmm.
I believe.
New York Botanic Garden.
It came to New York Botanical Gardens in the Bronx. After that, it went to the Lee Hockey Museum in Warsaw, Wisconsin.
Right, and you did an NPR
I did an NPR
radio show.
Yeah, live also.
Uh-huh.
With 100, but this time there weren't diners out there looking at us.
You weren't in a fishbowl.
Right, there were 150 people in the audience.
Uh-huh.
And all the people commuting at night, because it was right at the commute time, popular show there they have on commute time.
Right.
After that, we're at Kew.
Yes.
We finally made it to Kew. Dr. Shirley Sherwood came to my home and saw all the paintings. Mm-hmm. And I invited her over with a couple of artists. And she was very impressed. She told me, oh my, there are paintings here that I don't even have. I said, I doubt you have the best collection in the world.
Yeah.
And she does. And then she said, maybe we should bring it to Kew. And I said, we'd love to.
Maybe we should.
Yeah, maybe we should. Anything for a trip to London.
Yeah.
And finally, we're here. We opened it 2 weeks ago? Last week. No, 2 weeks ago.
No, 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago.
Right.
2 weeks ago. Right. Wow, time flies.
Yeah.
It was okay. A whirlwind.
Yeah. Carmen, do you want to explain to our listeners why Kew, like the significance of the show at Kew?
Well, I don't know if I'm qualified to answer that, but I can say my knowledge of Kew as it is the foremost botanical garden in the world. And while it's not the first, you know, there's some in Italy that are older.
Right.
As a research institution, as a
1759 is when the Botanical Garden was founded.
And it was and some of the early the first director and some of the earliest directors are some of my horticultural heroes, mm-hmm. like the Hookers, you know, and Sir Joseph
Capability Brown.
Capability Banks. Brown. Sir Joseph Banks, who, right. you know, I would like love to have dinner with sometime.
Me too.
If I could go back in time.
Yeah, he'd be at your table.
But the thing that's so extraordinary about Kew to me, and what I, Alice and I had a very brief visit there, we definitely want to go back and spend more time, is that they're not only historically relevant, but contemporary. They're constantly looking forward. They're constantly, I always say, and I said it on the last show, their website is one of my favorite horticultural websites because they share not just like the how-to of plants, but you know this the every aspect of horticulture mm-hmm. and culture related mm-hmm. to it. They just I don't know if they're extremely well funded. I think part of it has to do with the English love of gardening. I think
right.
you know,
they just got named a World Heritage Site. Too.
I mean, they far surpass from what I've seen any other botanic garden that I've ever visited at many levels, you know.
And then their collection of botanical art
is
unsurpassed in the world. And I've taken behind-the-scenes looks there when I was negotiating to bring the collection there.
Uh-huh.
So they opened the vaults and took out some of the masterpieces to show me that they don't display usually.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Well, speaking of that, we because of Isaac, we got to meet the head archivist, Christopher Mills, and he was going to be on the show with us today, but the we needed a longer show.
Yeah.
So
we're
going to do our own separate show at the close of your exhibit, Isaac.
Excellent.
So that we can put your show in context with the rest of what their collection is. He's the archivist and the manager of all of their art and their holdings.
And that goes to show it's not just a collection of plants there. Although so many plants that are used commonly in our gardens first were introduced there.
Yeah.
You know, we owe a huge debt to those 18th and 19th century plant explorers because they brought everything to Kew.
Uh-huh.
The Kew horticulturists figured out how to grow it.
And
propagate it, and then
so it's a display garden and it's a research center for the future for the preservation.
It's a great garden. I've been through it, and it's just magnificent.
Yeah, let me give a quick overview of what botanical art is from the ASBA website, and we'll talk a little bit about ASBA, and then we have to take a break. So very quick from the ASBA, in the tomb of Thutmose the third in Karnak, Egypt, there is a large stone frieze of 275 plants dating from the 15th century BC. It was created following the return of the Egyptians from a victorious campaign in Syria and depicts all the then-known plants of Syria. So this may be the earliest example of representational, accurate botanical art as we know it today. So that's the history of botanical art. And with the endangered world that we live in and the lessening of plant species, that's the necessity of botanical art and why this collection is so important.
And they knew it in the 15th century BC.
Right.
They knew it was important then.
Right. And then Kew was the organization to set this on the pedestal and make it what it is today. So we're going to take a break. We'll be back in a few minutes with Isaac Sutton. You're listening to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network.
Program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Washed rind cheeses are a fairly recent addition to the repertoires of artisanal cheesemakers in the United States. These cheeses tend to be stinkier than other types and are often high on the list of connoisseurs. Now, Whole Foods Market has come up with one of their own. The raw cow's milk cheese, made by Sprout Creek Farm in Poughkeepsie, New York, is washed with 6-point ale from Red Hook, Brooklyn. The beige sticky rind deepens in color as it ages. The satiny ivory cheese within is mellow, with a sweetly tangy bite and a grassy aroma. The current version features 6-point diesel, which is in limited supply, so stop by and pick up some before it's gone. And point of origin cheese is sold exclusively at Whole Foods Market in New York, Northern New Jersey, and Connecticut. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
Hi, welcome back to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Carmen DeVito. We're here with Isaac Sutton talking about contemporary botanical art and, of course, our trip to London and to Kew. We ate some good things in London, and we would be remiss not to talk about food on the show because this network is very much about food.
Well, food and horticulture.
Food and horticulture. So Isaac very generously took us to Jamie Oliver's restaurant, 15, which was very exciting, and
we learned about some new vegetables things.
We got quite an education.
It was a different menu.
Yeah, so there were some very interesting things on the menu that we didn't recognize.
Poacher was a cheese.
Which I thought, yeah.
Yes. We thought first it was a fish.
Right.
Yeah, we had to.
They had stuffed morels.
That's right.
And
so what was the favorite thing on the menu? What's the best thing you ate there, Isaac?
The thing I still remember is the white pizza with anchovies.
Yeah, and the onions. Yeah. Oh, my God.
I loved
it. It was delicious. I like the beets and the cheese curds.
The beets were incredible.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah. Something. The butter.
The butter.
I have to say, I wasn't brave enough to try the chicken butter. I couldn't get myself.
It wasn't. I actually preferred the other.
Regular butter.
The regular butter.
Yeah.
It was the chicken butter. I didn't taste it.
Well, it's hard to improve on good butter.
Yeah.
Right? I mean.
And the British are so good at butter and cream and, you know.
Yeah. And the idea of the restaurant is really interesting, too, Isaac. Do you know the sort of history,
philosophy
of it?
Of 15?
No. Well, the reason it's called 15 is because he's using it as a sort of laboratory and
funding.
He's using all the profits from the restaurant to train 15 people in the culinary arts, people that come from very rough, underserved neighborhoods.
And horticulture arts, because he's a big gardener as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's taking young people that would have a hard time in life, you know, getting jobs for whatever reason, incarceration, uneducated, what have you. And he's putting them in this restaurant to cook and to come out of it with real skills, you know?
The tastes were great.
Yeah.
So they're doing a good job.
It was, it was a real, like, fast track horticulture, crazy fast track, the whole trip to London.
Yes.
Like, it was food, and we went to the Borough Market, and we found the truffle honey.
Oh. Which I've been consuming nonstop and gained weight.
Truffle honey. I mean,
everything.
Unbelievable.
I know. Yeah. I texted Isaac. It's said, not does only your suitcase about smell like truffle
honey?
It did.
Yeah.
Yes.
My clothes did. Yeah.
For days.
Yeah.
And I almost didn't get it here.
Oh, really?
Wait a minute.
I packed it by accident in my carry-on.
So did we.
Yes!
We had such trouble. Yeah.
So when I got to the airport, they gave me the chance to go check it in. So I had time. I ran back out.
They packed
it in the box, and they came out unscathed.
Yeah,
because we were like, we are not going to.
I wasn't giving this up.
I was going to stand there and eat it all if I needed to.
Well, you know, they were. I have to say, it's been decades since I've been to London, and the people were very gracious, Isaac. I didn't have one bad experience.
No, they're very nice,
very polite.
I mean, from every store clerk to the equivalent of the TSA people at the airport, they weren't like. You know,
they were like,
okay, we're going to figure this out. You're going to go back out. You're going to check this. And
they were cooperative.
Virgin's very good at that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But tell them about Borough Market.
Oh, so
that's unbelievable.
Just the whole market was like a horticultural ecstasy.
An architectural ecstasy too, because it was like
a glassed in.
Yeah.
The steel trusses.
Like what? Was it an overpass or?
Well, there were trains going above.
Trains,
but it's covered.
Right.
Also,
so
at
it
the
was.
Same time.
It was almost like the Glass Palace, or
well, it's probably contemporary to the Crystal Palace.
The Crystal Palace.
I wouldn't be surprised.
You have to see my daughter Norma's eyes as we stepped into it. You know, at the beginning, her eyes widened, her mouth, her jaw dropped.
Yeah.
She couldn't believe what she was saying, and that was just the tip.
I know. And so the farmers, like the produce that was
the cheese
and the market and
the chocolate,
the vegetables,
desserts,
it was
everything.
It was just
it's how shopping should be. The truffles.
It was just unbelievable.
And what was amazing about it, Isaac, I thought too, was that it didn't feel over-curated. It felt natural. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it was beautifully displayed, but it wasn't.
It had a raw feeling to it.
It didn't feel like
you were in a shopping mall or like it was.
Like we have Eataly in New York. And you know that every square inch of that retail space was thought out.
Right.
You know what I mean? Whereas Borough Market.
It's more meandering and there's cobblestone streets.
It's outdoors.
And each one has their individual booth.
Right.
Yeah.
And they come and they set it up, but they all have that know how to make it attractive.
Yeah.
That's a competition.
Yeah. It was unbelievable. Beautiful. So, back to the exhibit.
Yes.
Tell us about some of the paintings and the painters that you particularly like to collect.
Okay.
Some of your faves.
Some of my favorites. One of my favorites is a eucalyptus triptych. The middle painting of the triptych is of the bark when it's wet.
Mm-hmm.
This painting is by David McKay, an Australian painter, one of the top Australian botanical artists, and it was the poster of the exhibit in Sydney, of the botanical show at the Sydney Royal Botanical Gardens at Sydney.
Right,
and
also British by origin.
Okay,
also royal.
Yeah,
also royal. Beautiful gardens, by the way, I've been. And over there, they put these posters up of this eucalyptus. It's like taken of a snapshot of the midsection of the eucalyptus. And the next
day, the rainbow eucalyptus, right?
Yes. So when you wet it, you see all colors in it.
It's red and pink and yellow.
Beautiful
and,
colors.
Yeah.
I saw that growing in Florida.
Yeah.
I saw it in Miami.
In Hawaii.
Beautiful.
So
tree.
David actually sprayed water on it to paint it.
Uh-huh.
Because it wasn't raining when he was painting. And the next day after these posters went up to advertise the show, they were all gone.
Mm-hmm.
They were gone because this is really art, not just scientific illustration.
Right, right.
Because what he did is he took a piece of the bark of the tree, which, if turned upside down, looks like the male anatomy.
Right, right.
Yes, it does.
Everybody got it.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody got it in Sydney.
Yeah.
They all wanted this poster home.
Yeah,
they took him out from.
They
from
turned him upside down. And
they hung him. You know, they left him upside down because you got to see it that way.
Yeah.
And that's one of my favorites. Another one, which will become an icon of modern art, is Beverly Allen, another Australian. I'm sorry, I'm bringing up the Australians now, but I'll get to the Americans and the British. An Australian artist, also top of her field, one of the grand dame of Australian botanical art.
Yeah, she was at the exhibit.
And she was there.
Yeah.
Of bamboos.
Mm-hmm.
I don't recall exactly which bamboos, but they're yellow and they're thick. And she showed me the stand.
Uh-huh.
in the garden that she painted them from.
Oh, nice.
And you see the negative space and the way you even feel the wind going through the bamboo as you, and it's a large painting.
Yeah.
I would say it's about 5 feet long,
yeah.
At least.
Yeah.
At least 5 feet long.
Yeah.
And so that one was one of my favorites. Of course, Katie Lee, an American artist also,
mm-hmm.
top in the United States, her Dogwood.
Uh-huh.
Of my dogwood, the one that's in front of my house.
Uh-huh.
Very Japanese feeling.
Right.
With negative space, and you almost think somebody from Japan painted it, and that's it's a fantastic painting. That's why we chose it as the cover and almost as the logo of the whole exhibit.
Right, right.
Right, right, Alice?
Yeah. Carol Wooden.
Carol Wooden. How could you mention?
We had her on the show.
We had her on the show.
She's fantastic.
Yeah.
She had. She has a... I believe a peony. Was it a peony? A peony.
Right.
It's Georgia O'Keeffe-ish like. Uh-huh. It's rich. It's decadent. You feel it. It's small. It's a small painting.
Uh-huh.
I usually tend to go towards the larger paintings.
Uh-huh.
It's just a little jewel.
Uh-huh. But then there's Susan Ogilvy in your collection. So let me tell our listeners, suttonbotanicals.com. You can go to the website and see all of these pieces, all of these paintings. But Susan Ogilvy's Dandelion with the
what do you
pods,
call those? The pods flying off
in the wind.
Into the mat.
Yeah.
She painted it onto the mat.
Yeah.
She saved me money. I didn't have to remat it. And then you have more. You have Regina Hedron.
Yeah.
French-German. She's a graphic artist, I believe. And her layouts and her roses are just dreamy,
mm-hmm.
really, really dreamy. Mm-hmm. I mean,
yeah, I'm looking at that now at the Regina.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I took those off of the wall in my daughter's bedroom, and she told me one day, "Daddy, where's the paintings?" I said, I'll hang up others. There's more.
Yeah.
So she has a fantastic, and then the catalog opens with Susanna Blacksill's pear,
right,
on black background.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely. It just jumps out at you. And Dr. Sherwood actually explained to me that she would actually paint the black first.
Oh, I was going to ask you if the paper is black, Isaac.
The paper's not black. She actually paints the paper black first,
okay.
Leaving the outline of the pear.
Uh-huh.
And then she paints the pear.
And then she in-paints.
And then she in-paints the pear. And then you have Domodar Gudjar, his poppies.
Yeah.
That's really unusual.
That's photographic.
Yeah.
It's so magnificent.
Yeah. It pops off the page.
It's And I have it framed all in black.
Uh-huh.
It's a blue background, so I had a dark color.
Mm-hmm.
I like to frame my paintings so they're complemented by the frame, or the frame enhances the visual experience when you come to the painting.
And now you bought, in addition to your exhibit at the night of the opening, there were two kind of side exhibits.
Yes.
At the Shirley Sherwood.
The two Sues, they call them.
Yes.
Sue Wilkinson and Sue...
Watkins, right?
I believe.
So
forgive
you,
us if we got the names wrong.
Yes, you can look it up on Q, at the Q website. So you bought two more paintings.
They were called A Black and White and In Color.
Uh-huh. Yes. That was a great exhibit,
It was a great exhibit. I mean, they were really, really beautiful paintings there. And... you know, I couldn't resist. I hope my wife's not listening.
I'm sure she is, because I broadcast all over.
Well, one of them is an Australian, too. Which Sue?
New Zealand.
Her work particularly struck me, Isaac, because it was like animal, I thought.
Yeah, it was more wild than you were used to.
Very much so.
She had. I bought two leaves of hers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She had two leaves.
Some of the flora, I think she had painted some native flora.
Yeah.
That was... I don't recall what species they were, but they were incredible. You know?
And then we really have to mention Celia Rosser. Celia Rosser is a botanical artist in Australia who spent a good part of 20, maybe plus years, painting the Bankaceas. And I'll leave that to you to explain what Bankaceas are.
Carmen.
Well, I know it's named after Sir Joseph Banks.
Right. That's right. They're native to Australia.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And very unique.
Very unique in the way they look.
Ancient plants.
Google Bankaceae and just look at them.
Yeah.
They look almost prehistoric.
Yeah. They're
dinosaur era.
There's nothing comparable anywhere else in the world.
Right.
The only thing that's maybe similar, Proteas,
yeah.
But not exactly.
But not, no.
Not even. They look like they have mouths and
they're very primitive looking. And
very primitive.
I mean, any nation that has a place called Botany Bay, you've got to love. Right. Yeah. Right? I mean, exactly. Like,
that's true.
So there's about 73 or 74 different types of bankaseas. And she painted them all for the Australian government, for the Monash University.
Right.
She was on the contract.
Uh-huh.
Well, the contract expired. She was done. And she did one of the newly discovered one, which they named after her, Bancassia Rosaria. Mm-hmm. I bought it. And I have it. And Shirley, Dr. Sherwood also convinced her to paint one for her.
Uh-huh.
And sell to her.
The competition.
There's a little... Before me.
Yes, okay. She was there before me. So I actually own two Bancassias by uh-huh. Celia. I have another one at home.
Right.
I just can't live without one at home. when I was saying the story in the walkthrough in Shirley Sherwood's galleries in the museum in Kew,
right.
Shirley pointed out that the Queen also has one. A Bancassia.
There you
go. So we're in good company.
You are, yeah. So your collection is, it's so purely American because it consists of the world, you know? All the artists are international. But I love that like, here you are as an American across the pond, you know, and you've got this amazing worldwide collection of international artists. And you're showing right alongside Dr. Shirley Sherwood at Q. You know, it's a remarkable, and you have the largest collection in the United States, we think.
We think so.
Yeah.
Oh, at least of quality botanicals.
Right, right.
I mean, because you can have non-quality botanicals.
Right, yeah, absolutely.
You can just...
So let's we have to kind of wrap things up. Unfortunately, our half hour is up. But talk for a few minutes about your work with the American Society of Botanical Artists, Isaac.
Okay, I'm on the board of the American Society of Botanical Artists. I'm also on the board of the New York Horticultural Society.
Right.
And over there at the American Society of Botanical Artists, we try to help promote artists to do their work, help them in their endeavors, also promote the art of botanical art.
Right.
And put it out to a wider audience uh-huh. by doing shows. Uh-huh. There is one going on right now at the New York Horticultural Society's offices in Manhattan.
Right.
Yep.
And, we brought a flyer.
Okay, good. It's a beautiful show.
Yeah, I haven't seen
very
it
Very nicely
yet.
Curated.
Yeah.
The original shows, I think, were curated by you.
Yes,
Alice.
I started them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Alice started them.
At the Hort. I started them at the Hort
I bought a lot of my paintings from the Hort.
Yeah.
And time, even the special exhibits that you had put on.
Uh-huh, yeah.
They do a beautiful job of helping out. We have a convention every year.
Uh-huh.
It goes to different cities, usually near gardens.
Yeah,
or
it's usually cited near botanic gardens.
Botanical garden or something interesting botanically.
Uh-huh.
And every other year or every 2-3 years in Pittsburgh.
Uh-huh.
To back home to the Hunt.
To the Hunt.
Because the Hunt is the foremost
in
the United States.
Yeah, and it's the second foremost after Q.
Of botanical documentation.
Right.
I also want to mention, as I have the postcard, that there are workshops at the Hort.
Yes.
If you have an inclination, you want to learn about it.
Uh-huh.
Several artists are having, some have already passed, but there's one November 15th with Beverly Duncan.
Yeah.
Excellent. In my collection.
Yeah, which would probably be a great class.
And there's also classes, several of the ASBA painters teach at New York Botanic Garden.
Correct.
And that's kind of their home.
That's the home of the ASBA.
Of the ASBA, right. Right. Exactly. So
so after Q, the collection comes back to New York.
Yeah, back to New York, back home.
Yeah. Well, right. It's had a very good run.
But Alice did say we're working on another one.
We are.
It's to paint the dogwood in front of my house.
Uh-huh.
By
the Satomi dogwood.
Yeah, the Satomi dogwood. Uh-huh. Or as we call it, the Sutton dogwood.
Yeah.
Okay. Sutton dogwood.
By as many botanical artists as we can, we usually pick 1 to 2 a year.
Uh-huh.
And after about 10, 15 years, we'll have about 20 paintings or so.
And what a catalog will be.
That's going to be how different artists view the same tree as it flowers every single year.
Yeah, I can't wait
It's almost like like when Monet paints the haystacks in different light.
Right.
This is a variation on a theme. It's the same tree by different artists, And Katie Lee was the first one, mm-hmm. and Carol Wooden already weighed in on that.
Yeah, and Jean Catherine Emmons, Waters.
Catherine Waters.
Yeah.
Monica DeVries,
mm-hmm.
And many more.
Yeah.
We have them coming.
It's going to be great.
Yeah. So they're all going to come to Brooklyn and
they all come to Brooklyn.
Okay.
They paint. With a rare exception when Alice has to take a clipping and mail it out.
That was the funniest day at the UPS store as I was boxing it up. They just couldn't believe that I would send like a clipping of a boxwood. And
a dogwood.
That I was boxing up.
Yeah, a dogwood.
And they were like, what? Why don't you just get one out there? And I said, no, you don't understand. It's the Sutton dogwood. It's going to be famous. Well, thank you, Isaac, for joining us and shedding some light on this great collection. And if you'd like to purchase a catalog, send Carmen and I an email and we can put you in touch with how to buy the catalog, Botanicals, Environmental Expressions in Art. We're giving away one free catalog to a lucky listener if you join our Facebook fan page at random. We will pick somebody this week. And if you want to just go online, it's suttonbotanicals.com. And look it up on Kew, too, and learn a little bit more about Kew as a botanical.
They have a blog on there.
They do.
With me.
Yes. Yeah.
So thank you for joining us on We Dig Plants today. Please follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Please follow us and try to win the book. I'm out of words today.
Yes, enough.
Thank you for listening. See you in the garden.
Happy gardening.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website, or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.